No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome back to another edition of BOA The Revival. And we got a special show for you tonight. Our guest is Gene Tewksbury. I've known Gene for a while now. Folks who visit the International Cryptozoology Museum up in Portland, Maine, I'm sure have come across Gene over the years. He recently finished up a 9-year run there as the operations curator for the International Cryptozoology Museum. Congratulations on a stellar 9 years at the ICM, Gene. Just tremendous. And she is a Eastern Cougar researcher, researcher of mystery cats, and she's going to be presenting at the upcoming International Cryptozoology Conference here at the end of April, April 26th and 27th in Portland, Maine, and also she's going to be at Fortean Fest 2024, June 8th in Sanford, Maine. So, New England folks, you got a couple of chances to see Gene talk about mystery cats. And tonight we're gonna be delving into the mystery cats. I don't think we've ever covered this topic on Banal of America before, and so I'm excited to explore this unique aspect of cryptozoology. So, welcome to Banal of America, Gene. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
So we always start off with the bio, the background. Who is Gene Tewksbury, and how did you get involved in all this stuff? How'd you get mixed up in the strange and unusual?
That happened at the age of 7 when I saw the movie Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot. Got a little hooked there. Read my first case book, one of John Green's books, in the 4th grade, and it was all downhill. Luckily enough, I was able to join the Cryptozoology Museum family there at the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland in 2015, and that's when I came upon the mystery cats. About 3 months into it, Lauren was like, "You need to start looking into the mystery cats." And I thought he was talking Black Panthers. Right. And he was like, no. And he said mountain lions. And I'm like, no, there are mountain lions in Maine. He's like, no, there's not. They're extinct. No. And literally it was back and forth about 10 minutes of me telling him, no, he was wrong. Only to find out he was not wrong. I told him, I said, growing up in coastal Maine, I live in the mid coast. It wasn't unusual as a kid to hear stories of people coming across bear sightings and mountain lion sightings. So I never realized that they were thought to be extinct in the eastern, you know, part of the U.S. Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of like, wow. So I decided, well, I'm going to start looking into this stuff. And I started getting some newspaper articles collected and talking to people who had sightings, because I've talked to people over the years before I even realized that have had sightings, especially in my area. So I was like, I'm going to start getting a little more involved in this. And then I started, after I had my own personal sighting, I started talking to some of the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries biologists and a few others. And we've had some nice conversations. We've gone over some of the stuff. I have a listing of cougar sightings for like the last, so I think it started, and the list goes from the 70s to present. Oh, and wow. Stuff. So they've been very helpful with me, dealing with me. I have pushed a few buttons, not meaning to, but I am adamant about the subject, and I want to know specifically, you know, what the laws are, you know, like for protection, since they have been removed from the endangered species list and stuff like that. So
they are considered, so these are like not Black Panthers, like you're saying, they're like cougars, and they're considered extinct, even though there's a lot of sightings of them in the area.
Yes. Yeah. They are considered extinct when there are sighting reports. Most times they chalk it up to misidentification and things like that, or a loose pet. It was one of the ones that I always get a kick out of. I've talked to some journalists who have done numerous articles on the subject. Two of them have. And they one of them said that when they talked to inland fisheries, that's what they got. They said it was almost robotic. No, that's not what you saw. You know, it's misidentification, a loose pet. So when I was speaking with some of the representatives in inland fisheries, the biologists and stuff, one of my questions was, is how many cougars are there as pets in the state? And I got the number. So it was kind of neat. I don't have like direct areas, but it would be more helpful if I knew kind of like a location. No, I don't need a specific address, because sometimes if you're driving by, these things need really big enclosure areas. And if you're driving by going, you know, 45, 50 miles an hour, you're not going to see a fence. You know, you might see this cat, and that could be some, you know, causes for it. So I can't get direct locations, but I understand why.
Yeah. They probably don't want to give that
kind. Yeah, I don't blame them. I mean, people deserve their privacy, but it would be nice to have like a general area type, you know.
Right,
thing.
Right.
But I was surprised that they actually gave me the number of people that actually have them. So,
is it a significant number?
No. It's a very minimal number. And then there's two of the Maine Wildlife Park in Gray. They have a couple, and then there's a animal park in Mount Vernon called Dew Haven. They have three. So I do know that they have those. I went to Dew Haven and actually talked to one of the people there that works with the cougars that they have there and stuff. So
yeah. And it stands to reason also that like if one got out, you would know, like it would get out, it would be known. Like they'd be like, look, one of the cougars got out, so we have to alert the authorities, right? So it's not like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like just because they have them that could be attributed necessarily to the sighting.
Yeah, we've had, I guess when I was talking to the gentleman, he was saying that people have actually come up going to them. Is one of your cats loose? You know, one of the mountain lions, cougars, whatever you prefer to call them, are they loose? And they were like, no. And if they were, you're going to have it come up to you because they're used to being fed. So they're going to come to people. You know, they're not going to be elusive and standoffish and skittish. He was like, they're literally going to come looking for you to feed them, you know.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. So. Exactly. Yeah. They're not going to be too fearful of people.
No.
So now you alluded to this, and you actually, it's rather recent, happened, well, a couple of years ago, but also like 2 weeks, a couple of years ago. I happened to see it on your Facebook page. April 2nd, 2022 was, I believe that was the date of your sighting. And you described it on your Facebook page as the sighting changed my life and my research, which is a pretty profound, declaration. So talk to me about this sighting that you had.
I was taking my daughter to work. She worked at Home Depot in Rockland. And on the way home, I was driving back my normal way. I go the back roads, and I was driving through Cushion. I had come down over a hill because it kind of goes downhill and then back up. But there's a marshland in there. And I happened to notice something coming out of the culvert area. And it came out right next to my car. And next thing I know, it's running up alongside. And I'm looking, and it's a cat. But it's not a full grown. It was about, I would say, from the shoulders to the ground, about 17 inches. And it was this rustic brown, almost like a reddish brown, with black spots all over it. And I'm literally thinking to myself that I'm seeing a baby leopard, you know, running alongside of my, and this thing actually ran alongside my car a good 30, 40 feet before it decided to jump off and leap into the thickets. So I got to the top of the hill. I turned around, I came back, and I parked my vehicle, and I got out trying to see if I could figure out where it went into without any luck. And the other thing I didn't think of at the time, because I was just kind of like, what am I seeing here, is I did not even think about Mama being around. Because
I was going to say you're braver than I am.
Because everybody's like, well, you go out at night, you know, and you do this, aren't you afraid of this? And I said, literally, most animals, black bears, they will move away from you. The only time you ever have to worry is if there's a cub around. And because this was a small, you know, cat, it couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 months old. I didn't think at the time that it probably didn't wander too far from Mama. Yeah. But I still didn't see anything. So I went home. I grabbed my stuff because I have gear that I have all prepared, plaster, my cameras, all that. And I went back to the area and I was able to find one print where it came out by the culvert. And I couldn't, because it ran, like I said, along the side of the road.
Yeah.
And I was able to cast that track. But after that, I just realized that I have this, I love a cryptozoology. Sasquatch is always going to be my favorite. That's what got me into it. But with this research here, I'm like, I could actually make a difference, maybe prove that they are still around and get them back on the endangered species list, you know, have some type of protection for them, because the protection they've got now, the biologist did not like my response when I said it's not enough, you know. He was like, what, they need special treatment? And I'm like, kinda, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
If they're that rare and they're thought to be extinct, there should be something, you know.
Right, right, yeah. People shouldn't be shooting them, that's for sure. So where, I'm trying to, like, it's a very odd, in a way, kind of realm of cryptozoology, out of place animal, really, if I guess what you would classify it. Because we know these creatures exist, but it's like they shouldn't theoretically, scientifically or whatever, exist in this area. What is the general area where they're not supposed to be, if you will? Is it like all of New England that they don't think that there's any?
It's most of the East Coast, right until you get to Florida.
Oh.
The whole Eastern United States, even Illinois. They will state that they don't have a cougar population and stuff. So it's not just New England. It's the Eastern, all the Eastern states.
Yeah. It's so strange in a way that it's like, it shouldn't be controversial. It's just like, if a bunch of people are seeing these things, then they must still kind of exist in the area. It's just, you know what I mean? I'm surprised there's such pushback, from wildlife officials or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I mean, I talked to them because there's a lot of when I talked to the retired biologist who actually declared them extinct, he said there's a lot of mistruths out there, too, because people get nervous when this topic comes up, because I was actually told at one point when I did an interview that I am opening up a can of worms here, and it's a bad can of worms. And a lot of people are like, well, if they discover they are still around, they're going to buy up property, they're going to do this, and they're going to do that. And when I was talking to the wildlife biologist, the retired one, I said, why would they need to? These animals have their own territories. They're very elusive. You really, if even out west, they will tell you, if you have a sighting of one out west, and where there's large numbers in the populations of them, it is still a rarity, because they are that elusive. They do not like to be seen. And so I'm like, you wouldn't have to, because they have their territory. As long as they're protected, you know, it should be fine. You don't have to buy up logging land or this or, you know, people's property. And he goes, no, you don't have to. He goes, but people get all these emotions going. And then it's like, oh, you know, it becomes, he said, a conspiracy theory type thing, you know. And so we were just talking about it, because I was like, I don't understand. He goes, it's not. He goes, there are a lot of mistruths out there, you know, being told or thought, you know. People just start getting these concepts in their head and then they just go with it, you know.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah. It seems kind of like, yeah, like you're saying, it's like, I don't think they would need to buy up the land. They're already existing and thriving or whatever in the area. You don't need to, you don't really need to kind of even mess with them. So it seems kind of counterintuitive to me, but, so yeah, mystery cats, very interesting. And how many sightings would you say generally happen? Do you, do you get these? Like, do people report them to you now at this point, or are you just kind of?
I get some reported to me. I've had some that have been stated, and I get in touch with people that have had sightings just to find out if they're willing to talk to me, if I can document their sightings. But when I was talking to the current biologist for my region and stuff, I was telling him since 2019, and I literally was in his office last August. I said from 2019 until that present time, there has been over 14 sightings in my area within a 30-mile radius.
Oh, wow.
And he looked at me and he said, no, he said, you need to, he said, actually kind of double or triple that, he said, because they get a lot of sightings reports in my area. But it's a bigger county too. It's not in that 30 mile, but he literally looked and he goes, I don't know what's in the water in your county, but there's something in it because there is numerous reports that come out of it.
Wow. That's really weird. And we're sure these are like real cats, not some kind of paranormal phenomenon or anything like that. Right?
No, they're real cats. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't.
Although I do like the term they use, ghost cats, but a lot of people tell me that that's probably not good to use because they're so elusive. They do call them ghost cats.
Yeah, or like phantom big cats or something like that. Yeah, yeah. It gives them sort of an extra air of exoticness. Not like they really need it, but so is the idea generally that these creatures just live there? Like it's the. Because when I think of the big cat phenomenon, I also think of the English big cat, the alien big cat. And that's like a whole thing where it's like, oh, they think the big cats came from the change in the law and people released the big cats and that's where the big cats came from. But is the idea here with the with the mystery cats that you researched just live there pretty much? It's not really that mysterious in a sense where they came from?
No, I mean, a lot of times too, like they'll, the biologist would say too, they can travel from other states and they have. I mean, I think it was 2010, the one was killed in Connecticut. It actually came from South Dakota, the Black Hills of South Dakota, and it traveled all the way to Greenwich, Connecticut. It took, I think, a year and a half though, from the time it left, they were able to, kind of follow its pattern with scat DNA and stuff like that. Before it got killed, it was never collared. So it just got to the point where it was old enough to leave mama. It was a male. They usually, males, mountain lions, I know, have about 150 mile territory.
Yeah.
So if you know, this one was trying to find his territory, but if you could if you come to a territory, it's already got one, you got to keep moving.
Right. That makes sense.
And stuff. So, yeah, but they do. I mean, they do migrate across sometimes and everything. So a lot of times it'll be something like that, it just, wandered in and it wandered back out and stuff. But that's not as much of an explanation. You know, they don't use that one as much as they do. It's like a misidentification.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, I see that a lot that's how they sort of dismiss a lot of the British big cat cases. They're like, oh, it's because most of the footage is always kind of like from really far away, so then they say, oh, it's really just a house cat or whatever. Which is kind of it's dismissive in a sense. But have you looked at the British big cat phenomenon at all? You must have.
I've looked a little bit into it, not much.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting phenomenon. Has anyone ever, I guess in a sense, a lot like with Bigfoot, no one's ever like hit one of these cats or anything that would kind of, in a sense, I don't know if that would really solve the mystery very much, but it would certainly sort of add credence to the credibility of these creatures living in the area, right?
Yeah, but the way that it is most like out west, there are a lot of collisions with cars, even in Florida, there's a lot of collisions and fatalities with these big cats. But it's like when you start to like talk about, when I was talking to the biologist, when you start talking like Maine, a lot of the areas that the sightings are happening, they're very rural. areas. They're not high traffic, major freeways type thing, you know. So, it, yeah, in order for one to, you know, probably for them to verify that it was, you know, they could be here is if one was hit. A lot of times that's what it is people are driving and they see these things and they're fast, but it's you don't know. The way that I looked at it when I was talking to the biologist there is that there's a lot of times there are a ton of deer here. They get hit. Sometimes the deer just kind of it just rolls off them. They get back up. They take off, yeah. You know, and they keep going. And if you hit one, you don't know. I mean, if you don't kill it and stuff and you could still think yeah. You might have hit a dog or something, you know,
right,
like I
right.
said, it's hard to say, but yeah, and that's what I was worried about that day with my sighting was, I mean, I'm going, once you get down over that hill, I'm down to 25 miles an hour, but it was like when that thing came out, I'm slowing down even more because I'm trying not to hit it.
Right, right. It must have been pretty remarkable to be looking at this out of place creature right next to your car. I mean, I guess, as you said, it changed your life in a way, so.
Yeah, it was literally my mind's going in 50 million directions of what the heck, you know, yeah. It's a little leopard, you know, and I knew it wasn't a little leopard, but it was one of those things of trying to wrap my head around what I had just seen, because a lot of sightings are only, you know, just a few seconds, you know. Yeah. And stuff. And this one, because I was trying not to hit it, I'm literally staring at this thing, you know, and it was a good, you know, 30 seconds or more that I had that. Yeah. So it was remarkable and life changing. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Now you've also done expeditions for Bigfoot, Dogman and Mystery. So tell me about these Bigfoot expeditions.
I did my first Bigfoot expedition in Whitehall, New York.
Oh, I love Whitehall.
Whitehall is my favorite spot. I would always tell people when they came into the museum and they had an interest, if they were, you know, somewhere they could get, always make sure you go to Whitehall. It is it's like the researchers' Bigfoot capital of the East Coast, you know, is how I always called it. It was phenomenal. I mean, I visited Abear Road. I went to the town office while I was there and got the ordinance, because they have an ordinance where you're not allowed to harm a Sasquatch if you come across it. We had some audio with some knocks and some rock throwing and stuff. It was a remarkable trip.
Yeah. Interesting. So rock throwing, huh?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't part of that. We split up into teams, and I was on the side of the road with the gentleman who was actually running it, and we were therming the area. I took my husband because I didn't know really anybody, and I dragged him along. He's not into the Bigfoot thing, but he loves camping and night hiking, so he loved it. But him and another gentleman went into the woods, and we get this call over the walk. About 30-40 minutes into it, and the guy sounds terrified. He's like, we've got noise surrounding us, and you could hear the fear in his voice, and I'm like, oh crap, I just stuck my husband out there. And my husband literally is trying to turn his headlamp off and go in the direction, and he's being told not to, and he's like, I'm sorry, but I want to know what the heck's going on here, you know. But when we got the audio back and we were listening, you can hear rocks pinging off the trees.
Oh God.
And it was neat because it wasn't it wasn't from movement surrounding them. It was from rocks being thrown.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a fun trip. My husband still to this day says, I can't say that I believe, because he knows I don't use that term, but he was like, I can say that I had some stuff happen that I cannot explain.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Whitehall's fantastic. I don't know if you've been up to the festival they have there, but it's quite the party.
Yeah. No, I haven't been to the festival yet.
You should check it out. You'd be blown away. It's immense. Like I couldn't believe how I thought it was going to be some sort of like a small thing. And then I got there and I'm like, holy Moses, this is enormous. It is really, it's quite the happening. I would highly recommend folks check that out. Definitely you. You're close enough to, like me, to make the drive. So it's definitely it's pretty awesome. Now I see you're wearing a P22 shirt. This is a famous big cat, right? Or some kind of thing. I saw some coverage on your Facebook. Can you tell me the story here about the P22?
All right. Well, P22 was a year and a half old. He crossed two major highways in California and ended up in Griffith Park, where they ended up tranking him, collaring him, and releasing him back into the park. He was considered the loneliest bachelor in the world because, like I said, male cats have up to 150-mile territory.
Yeah.
He could not have that because where he ended up, he with the freeways trying to cross back, he would have died. And Griffith Park is in, like, I want to say, it's near the Hollywood Hills. So it's part of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's an 8 mile. The park is 8 miles wide. OK. And, you know, for the area, it's 8 miles for Griffith Park. And it does border along the Hollywood Hills with the homes and stuff. But he lived there from 2012 to when he died in 2022. He never left that area. Hundreds and hundreds of people daily hike, bike, picnic. They do plays in the park and everything. And he never bothered a soul.
Yeah. Wow.
He ate the deer. He ate the raccoons. He did every now and then go after, you know, cats that were in the neighborhood. He was considered the most famous cat because people in the Hollywood Hills, like people around here, they have the cameras for their driveways and their yards and stuff. And he'd be just passing by, or he'd be laying on their lawn until a headlights came, and then he would get up and scoot off and stuff. But he showed the world you can coexist with these animals.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of people didn't realize. And I kind of admired the fact that he could stay in such a small area and never bother a soul.
Yeah. Where's the P22 come from?
That's because when they collar him, they do a P and then they give him a number. And he was P22. It's horrible. But they don't name the cougars because they don't want to get attached. Although everybody got attached to P22.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was kind of like a local legend or something like that.
Yeah, there was a National Geographic photographer. He has several pictures of him, but one of them was just absolutely beautiful with P22 just walking along the hillside, and on the hill behind him is the Hollywood sign.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like one of the most famous photos of P22.
That's remarkable. Yeah. Well, I mean, like you were saying, it stands to reason as more development happens that these creatures might have to move around to other areas of the country. And I can see how that's why they end up like in the New England area, you know, over time, because where else are they going to go? Right. They need like a certain amount of area to roam and everything. So, you know, and like, it's kind of astounding to me that there's such pushback about this from the, I get kind of why it's like a politically hot thing, but like Maine is like super rural. It's like there's tons of woods up there. I'm sure all kinds of creatures are running around. I don't know why it would be even that hard to believe that there would be a big cats in there.
Well, that's one of the things I'll cover with my talk is I have a couple scientific studies that have been done, and one has to do with DNA. But it's the University of Montreal did it, I believe, in 2006. But I actually went on, when I got the thing, there was a way for me to request the whole actual scientific report that was printed up. And it took 6 months, but I finally was able to get it and stuff. And they did some tests and some little scent traps and stuff, and they there was DNA that was discovered.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's interesting. It does seem like there's more awareness of the topic in recent years than I recall. You know, maybe that's thanks to the work that you're doing. I know that I think there was like a documentary made maybe about New England big cats. So it seems like the topic's getting more interest lately.
Yeah, I know that Alexander there, he's, I can never say his last name right. He does a lot of stuff with Small Town Monsters. He did a documentary, Lions of the East.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it does seem like, because certainly, like you said, when you first got into this, you really weren't aware of this big cat phenomenon, if you will, right? And then now it's fairly, here you are doing presentations on it.
Yeah, it was funny because when I was at the museum, Lauren's like, you're changing your whole research from Sasquatch to this, why? And I said, there's so many great Bigfoot researchers out there, and I'm still going to still continue to do it, but there's not many that do this. Yeah. And I just felt like maybe, just maybe, I could make a difference. Can't guarantee it, but I'm going to try.
Well, you're certainly raising awareness of it, so that's a good thing, you know. I don't know. You know, it's hard to change minds, I guess. But to me, it's like I think that a lot of people just haven't really given it much thought in the first place. But you got to deal with the wildlife people, right? The professionals there who.
Yeah, and what was funny is when I met with the biologist in my region, I told him, because I was like, I'm going to write down this stuff. And he's like, go for it, you know. But I was going over some of the newspaper articles because I've collected a bunch of them, because I try to keep it within the last 30 years because there's been so much studies done on it, a lot of good work. First with Bruce S. Wright, who was a zoologist and wildlife biologist in New Brunswick. He did some phenomenal work, and I have his books on it, and literally the stuff going over it, he did amazing work. But then you have Chad Armand, or I'm hoping I'm saying his name right. He did a book called Varmints, and it covers like a lot of like the states that they're supposed to be extinct in the newspaper articles and stuff. So it's like I figured I'm just going to stick with like 1990 and on because of the lifespan of these cats. They only have 10 to 12 years in the wild, depending on what happens and stuff. And I was like, so I kind of try to keep focus and keep track of like where these sightings are, because there have been sightings with a lot of there's been several sightings of kittens, like I've seen, you know, of small ones and stuff. So it's like, well, okay, that would have been this time, so they would have been grown. It won't be this one, but could it be an offspring, you know, something like that, you know? So
now could you, I guess it says you have done expeditions for mystery cats. Could you go, what would you do on an expedition for a mystery cat? Just try and, I don't even know where they would be in a sense, I guess just in sort of a wooded area.
Well, what I try to do with it is I try to, like, if there's areas where there's been multiple sightings, it's not like a Bigfoot one. You don't stay there for, you know, like a week or a weekend or whatever. Yeah. Is I go there frequently. I check the area out. I set up trail cams. I have scent traps that I put up as well. And I found out through the state biologist that my traps are the same ones that they use for the University of Montreal study. So I was kind of happy about that.
Yeah.
So I was like, yay. And you know, so you have to, it's not like, you know, I mean, I can go to a place for a weekend and kind of like scope it out, know where I want to put the stuff, but it's not the same as an expedition for, you know, looking for Sasquatch or Dogman, which that one was a weekend one. And that was a lot of night stuff that we do. There was an area that we were at. I don't want to disclose a whole lot on that because I can't. But I'm not one of these people. You know, I'm into the cryptozoology. I know nothing of, like, you know, the UFO phenomenon stuff. Yeah. But there was a lot going on in that area that I was like, holy cow.
Really? This is a dog. You went on a dog man expedition.
Yeah.
After my notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you don't want to say, can you say what state? Was it like in Wisconsin?
It was in Maine.
Oh, Maine. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can talk to you more without, you know, at the conference.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I like the off the air chats. Yeah. Those are the best ones.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. See, because I don't think I've ever heard of Dog Man in Maine. So, but again, it would be like.
Yeah. There's a famous song. You'll have to look it up in Palmyra, the pack.
All right. Interesting. Now, what do you make of the Dog Man? Because I remember, ironically enough, I remember the International Cryptozoology Conference way back with the late, great Linda Godfrey spoke. And she amazed me. I later had her on the show. We talked about this, but she kind of amazed me because she was like, this shouldn't make sense. Like, the physiology of dogs, like, doesn't make sense how they could be walking around like that. So what do you make of that sort of conundrum, if you will, that the dog leg, like, doesn't seem, I mean, they can kind of like briefly get by on two legs, but it doesn't seem like it's fit for regular bipedal locomotion.
No, that's kind of like always been the question for me when I did the thing. It was kind of like new because I'm trying to figure out how, like, you know, it shouldn't be possible. So how is this happening, you know, and stuff, but we didn't have much luck with that, you know, in the area we were at. We got a few reports and stuff, but it was one of those things of stuff like that fascinates me because, you know, it shouldn't be possible, period. Right. And yet people are still seeing this stuff and reporting this stuff. And a lot of times, I mean, you have people, they'll tell you, oh, your mind plays tricks on you and stuff. But there are some people that when they have these sightings, they literally, you can tell that there was like fear in the whole situation. And it makes to me, you know, it makes it almost like, how can you doubt? I mean, they're that terrified. They're that, you know, it's strange. And it's like, but how, you know, how is this possible?
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the weirder, more vexing, cryptids, if you will. Yeah, it's certainly a strange one. That's like I said, and I always was really, you know, kudos to Linda for sort of addressing the elephant in the room and being like, this shouldn't be possible. I don't understand how, This is even.
Yeah,
possible.
No, she did amazing work. I was happy. I was there for that one and got to meet her and stuff. And yeah, she did phenomenal work.
Now, talk a little bit about your time. You're the what's an operations curator? You were the operations curator for the International Cryptozoology Museum.
I managed it. It was just a fancy title for I managed it.
Well, talk about that time. It must have been an amazing experience. You know, what was it like to manage this world-renowned museum?
It was fantastic. Like I said, I could not believe that in 2015, I joined the family. Lauren, Jenny, all of them were wonderful. I learned a lot from Lauren and like I said, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if it was not for our conversation and me arguing with him over it. But yeah, I loved the fact that I could meet people from all over the world. I met people from Romania, from New Zealand, Australia. We met a Yowie researcher that I was working one day with Jenny, Lauren's wife, when the Yowie researcher came in and we were discussing the thylazine sightings and stuff and everything. And he was saying the same thing with like the mystery cats. A lot of times there, when there's a sighting, they're not their wardens, they're park rangers. That's what he was saying. The park rangers will tell you that it was, you know, a dingo or, you know, whatever and right. stuff. And he goes, but the last sighting, and he starts laughing, you know, chuckling. And we were like, what's so funny? He goes, well, the last sighting, he said, was from a park ranger and he couldn't argue with himself.
Yeah, we love that. Love that creature.
Yeah. So, it was great. I mean, I've gotten stories from people all over the country, you know, and, you know, different sightings and stuff. A lot of them were Bigfoot sightings. Some of them were, you know, out of California and stuff. I like the fact that while I was there, I worked on a networking system to find other museums similar, you know, yeah, to the Cryptozoology Museum, because I mean, we have plenty of Bigfoot museums within the U.S. along with mm-hmm. like the Mothman Museum, Flatwoods, yeah, stuff yeah. like that. But I was able to find that in Iceland, there's actually an Icelandic sea serpent museum. It's only open from June to September. But I found that, and I thought that that was really cool that China was getting ready to open up a monster museum of their monsters and stuff as well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's like, Lawrence is like the one and only cryptozoology museum, but I think there are like it. Maybe you would know. I've been to two at least. I think there's up to, I want to say there's at least six Bigfoot museums beyond the Portland International Cryptozoology Museum. That might even be a low estimate.
Yeah, I literally cannot remember. Like I said, I did the networking, and I knew of the ones in California. Cliff Brackman opened his up a few years ago, the North American one. We've got the Skunk Ape Museum in Florida. There's a cryptozoology paranormal one that deals with like the Bigfoot stuff and everything else in North Carolina. You've got Expedition Bigfoot in Georgia. You've got one in Nebraska, the Bigfoot Museum. I cannot remember the name of that one. I'm so sorry.
Yep. I know the lady who does that one.
Yeah.
And there's West Virginia also. There's one in West Virginia.
Yep. West Virginia just got one. Yep. So yeah.
And there's one, I'm going out to San Jose later this year, and I think there's one like an hour south of San Jose. And so there's like probably two, at least, Bigfoot museums in California. So.
There is. Yeah, there's two.
Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. If I ever won the lottery, maybe I would be like a road trip. Just go to all the different Bigfoot museums in America.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you're going to be – do you have any celebrity – recollections from working at the museum? Because that was one of the cool things. Lauren always posts the pictures. Like, you know, Portland's a pretty big city, and there's always something happening in Portland. People come through town, big bands or comedians or different celebrities and stuff, and they pop in. Very often they pop into the museum because it's, as I said, it's world renowned.
Yeah.
Do you have any particularly memorable moments of celebrity run-ins at the museum?
Well, the only one, and I mean, they're a band that's well known, but they're not like, you know, Billboard charts, was Murder by Death, stopped in. I didn't know at the time exactly who they were. I knew that it was a band, and they all came in together. They had, their own personal photographer with them and stuff. And it was funny because at the time I was going through a Grimm phase because my favorite show was Grimm, and I was drawing out some of the stuff, and they were going through and they came back out. One of the band members looked at me and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just going through this Grimm phase. They ended my show." And he was like, "My girlfriend was an extra on this." So we started talking this.
Oh, nice.
And then we started talking cryptids, and two of the other ones got in, and they were really great. But I thought it was hilarious because the other guests that came to the museum that day were all realizing, because they were like, "We went to the show last, oh my God, they're here," you know. And I have always been one, when I first started there, I was told you're going to get celebrities and you just need to act really calm. And I said, I treat celebrities the way that I treat everybody. I had when I first started, we had John Lennon's son visit. Yeah. And Jenny did photos with him and stuff, but she looked at me and she said, "You were so calm and cool." And I'm like, because they're a person. Right. You know, and most celebrities, that's the way they want to be treated, just like a regular person. You get somebody who wants to be treated like they're special, and then I may have an attitude that they won't like because I'm not treating anybody special. You know, it's like... So I don't usually go gaga over the stuff. I try to just stay calm and treat people respectfully. You know, I figured they've got a busy life and other stuff to do. So there's no sense to, you know, get up in their face or anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, if they go, they don't want to, they just want to be left alone, right? So they're kind of like,
yeah, and that's, I mean, there were others that had popped in and stuff. I mean, Lauren would find out at, you know, points and stuff and be like, oh, well, this one's going to show up. Can you try to get a picture with Crookston? And, yeah, you know, most of the time they were all very, you know, I don't think anybody ever said no to me and stuff, but I also didn't chase them around and stuff. I'd be like, I know who you are. I'm not going to make a big, I'm not going to make a big, I'm not going to make a big fuss, but could I get a picture of you with Crookston? And they'd be now, like, sure. You know,
no, now, no wrestlers ever come in? I'm surprised.
I am so upset because when I worked there, I found out Chris Jericho, the GOAT, Chris Jericho. Yep. Okay. I love Fozzy, love Chris Jericho, and he has his own podcast as well.
He's big into the paranormal and everything, too.
Yeah, and he had Lauren on the show. Lauren was telling me, because he found out that I was a big wrestling fan when I started, and he was telling me shortly after, within the weeks, well, a couple weeks of starting, that he didn't realize how big of fan base wrestling had until he went on to the show. And then he said his social media blew up with like friend requests and followers and stuff. And so I decided to send an email to Fozzy, to Chris. You know, I sent it to all of the things there.
Yeah.
Because I knew that they were coming to Portland and I was figuring this is full circle. Lauren's been on Chris's show. Chris and the boys could come to the thing. I didn't get a response, so I was very, very upset because I was going to give them a personal tour. I got Lauren's permission to do this. Lauren said, yes, go right ahead, you know, and stuff. But he had done, because at the time, I think when I emailed him, they had been down in West Virginia for something, and they actually did an episode on Mothman on his podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And stuff. So, yeah.
So, okay. So they didn't come by at all?
No. I didn't get a response.
Wow. I'm surprised in a lot of ways, just not necessarily with the Chris Jericho, but just in general, because wrestlers do kind of like a lot of that weird stuff.
Yeah, well, I figure with Chris, I don't hold it against him. I mean, he's got people that read the stuff, right, so they probably thought I was a crackpot or something. I don't know. This crazy lady keeps emailing you.
Yeah, well, that would be cool. That would be cool. Well, you know, maybe they just go unnoticed. Like, people, they come in, they're just really big-looking people, so I don't know.
I probably would have gone a little, you know, fangirlish if a wrestler did walk through the door. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you recognize them because you're a big wrestling fan, so yeah.
Yeah.
So you're gonna be presenting at the crypto conference here. I got the page up now. It's April 26th and 27th. The 26th is like a Friday night VIP event. And let me just see, a meet and greet. Bunch of folks are going to be there. Nate Brislin. Oh, actually, yes, I want to mention, too, just sort of in a way, it's really cool about the museum. If you think about it, it's like kind of like a think tank in a sense. Like, you came out of the museum and Nate came out of the museum, you know, and it's just really a testament to the facility or the establishment in a way that, you know, it's spawning new researchers who are now getting into the field and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be happy to see Nate again. I haven't seen Nate in about 2 years now since he left and stuff. He's been really busy and everything. So it'll be great being able to catch up with him. And it's going to be great having the conference because I like just being able, you know, you're going to be there. Haley's going to be there. There's just going to be a bunch of people that I haven't seen in a long time. So it's going to be kind of like this big reunion, cryptozoology reunion, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think I don't think Lauren's done one since pre-pandemic, so like 2019. So we're talking like almost 5 years. So yeah, 5 years. Friday night is the keynote address is going to be J.W. Auker, author of United States of Cryptids, A Tour of American Myths and Monsters. I will not be there on Friday night. I will be there on Saturday, hanging around, just chilling, just wandering around, mostly checking out the vendor tables, and I'll be seeing Gene, of course, speak on Mystery Cat. She'll be on at 12:15. Our friend Haley Eldridge, she'll be presenting in the afternoon my favorite 25 cryptozoology facts. She's got this Facebook page, Cryptozoology Facts. It's fantastic. Just a constant barrage of really interesting and neat, unique factoids and sort of little tales and snippets from the world of cryptozoology. Plus, David Goodsward, I hope I pronounced that right, Christopher Packard, Pat Spain, Michelle Sillier, and tons of vendors, and of course the man himself, Lauren Coleman. He's going to be on at the end. And that's in Portland, Maine, April 26th and 27th. So I think we're going to be dropping this episode this coming Wednesday, so that gives folks 10 days to figure it out. If you're in New England, definitely make the drive and check it out. Because as you know, Lauren's talking about moving the museum, so it's kind of like you got to get there. I had a whole bunch of friends up. I didn't see you over the summer. I came up in September with a whole bunch of people. And
I was in the Bangor one at that time.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, Lauren's trying to shift everything up to Bangor. So yep. I talked to a lot of people over the years, and it's like a bucket list destination. And now it's kind of like on borrowed time. So if you want to see this International Cryptozoology Museum before it moves to Bangor, you know, you got maybe a couple of years here, and why not roll it up in with the conference this weekend so you can see everybody? So that would be – that's kind of my hard pitch. Now, you say you kind of got into this with Bigfoot. Do you have a theory on what Bigfoot is?
My theory is he's some unknown primate. That's the way I've always stuck with it.
You don't entertain the supernatural, paranormal element to it?
No, I stick with flesh and blood.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing with the mountain lions and stuff. I don't do phantom cats and stuff. I don't know why. Actually, I do, because anything that has to do paranormal and stuff creeps me out. And I have plenty of friends that deal with that stuff, so they can do it. Because, like I said, I would rather be out in the woods and have something 8 to 10 feet tall rip me to shreds than be out there looking for something that you could follow me home and torture me for the rest of my life that I can't see. So, we're all good there.
So you don't do a ghost hunting and any of that?
No. I have friends that do that, not all the power to them, love them rich pieces, but no, I'm not doing that.
Now, beyond Bigfoot and the Dogman, the Mystery Cats, is there any particular – I mean, you are surrounded by cryptozoology. Are there any particular sort of creatures or cases that also interest you, maybe like Loch Ness Monster or Ogopogo or something like that?
The thylacine sightings – and stuff that, and even like the photos from, I think it's 2019, Peter Groves photos and stuff, that stuff fascinates me.
Yeah.
Just because of the aspect of, and it's the same, I think with the aspect of the thylacine, it is with the mountain lion. My thoughts on this are, if you're hunted to the point of extinction, you're going to stay the hell away from what put you in that point. So why would you expect that they're going to be showing themselves to humans all the time? They're going to be avoiding us like the plague. And I think that's one of the things that always fascinates, plus the fact of how unique the thylacines are, being marsupials and that ability to unhinge their jaw where they can yawn, it's massive and stuff. I've always found
that. The tails,
yeah. It's like, because their tail is so thick, they can actually stand on their hind legs if they had to, and balance with it. They don't need to, but they can,
Yeah.
It's insane just how that animal, how it is, how it evolved, or what, it's so fascinating. That was one that I always, it was one of the things of, that's one of my favorites, and when we'd have people come through, we'd always do introductions. But sometimes they would get busy and they'd have to be quicker ones. So if I, was ending up like having to go check on something and I walked by, I'd be like, oh, okay, so I'm going to tell you, have you seen this? This is like the coolest. And people were like, oh my word, are you kidding me? They were so fascinated by it. And I'm like, I love this. Love this.
Yeah, it was, while you were talking about the big cats, it did kind of like ring a thylacine bell in my mind where it's like, these are very similar predicaments, if you will, similar scenarios where they're sizable. Well, thylacine is kind of more dog size, but they're like big enough. You know what I mean? They're biggish creatures and they're elusive. People see them, but like there's just this complete like authoritative or officialdom denial of them being around.
So yes.
Really wild in a way. It's like, what do you think of the efforts to revive the thylacine?
I don't like the efforts. I'm sorry. It's like if they are extinct and say that, these sightings are, you know, nothing more than, you know, misidentifications, whatever. But you can't bring it back fully the way it was.
Right.
And it's just, I'm not into that whole, you know, let's recreate it.
Yeah. That's fine. don't worry. Yeah.
I'm starting to get Jurassic Park moments in my head here, yeah. You know.
No, it's, yeah, well, it's certainly controversial, because it's like, well, where are you going to put them? They, you know, this talk of, like, reintroducing them into the wild of Australia, and it's like, now you're going to just mess up the ecosystem, possibly. I mentioned this to somebody else. Have you ever heard of the moose in New Zealand?
No.
There's this crazy thing that happened where they imported a whole bunch of moose to, like, an island in around the New Zealand, Australia area, a sizable enough island for sport hunting. But like, it didn't take for some reason. I think they were like, no, all the moose died out, but people still see from time to time these moose on the island in down under, let's say. So yeah. People should Google that. It's a crazy, I couldn't believe
it. I'm going to have to check that, because I do, my other favorite is the Spectre Moose of Maine. I do love that.
The Spectre Moose is like a literal kind of, for lack of a better term, phantom moose.
Well, that's what they say. You know, people have shot at it. It's disappeared and, you know, stuff like that. I don't know if I kind of, I read the stories, but to me, it's one of those fascinating things, because you don't know, is it phantom? Is it real? Is it one of those that has, there's a genetic disease that just turns it all white, but they still have the brown eyes, you know?
Yeah,
so that's one of those. It's one of the conundrums of, could it be this? Could it be that? But it's still fascinating to actually, you know, think about and try to figure out.
Spectral moose. Yeah, I think I have heard of that. Yeah, interesting. Well, if they can be people ghosts, why can't they be ghosts of moose? So, you know. But yeah, Google that. I don't know if it's New Zealand or Australia, but it's somewhere down there. Moose. They imported them. Crazy, crazy story. So yeah, you're going to be at the conference April 26th, 27th, cryptozoologymuseum.simpletix.com. And you're also going to be at Fortean Fest 2024, June 8th in Sanford, Maine. I don't have a website for that, folks. So just punch in Fortean Fest 2024, Sanford, Maine. So you're on the circuit now. That's exciting. So are you looking forward to, is this going to be your first presentation? Can't be. No, you must have done one.
I've done a talk. I did a talk on cryptozoology in 2019. This is actually going to be my first talk, though, that is specific to the mystery cat sightings. The cryptozoology one kind of covered everything from, like, animals of discovery, like the panda and different ones, to the thylacine, and then some of the new species that have been discovered in 2019. The Tapu Nui orangutan's absolute favorite. Anybody says what, you know. But it covered that. It covered Bigfoot. It covered, you know, a lot of different stuff. This one is going to be my first that is specifically based on the research I do now.
All right. Excellent. And that'll be this in a couple weeks. April 26th, 27th, Portland International Cryptozoology Conference. Then the 40 and Fest, June 8th, Sanford, Maine. Now, before I let you go, we got to do like 5 minutes of wrestling talk.
All right.
So for all now this is where they all shut off. But anyway, so what did you think of, I'm interested because I know you're a huge AEW fan, or a big AEW fan. Are you an overall wrestling fan still? Because I've given up on WWE. I can't. I try.
I still watch both. AEW is my favorite. I still watch both. Mainly Raw, because I'm a big Damian Priest fan. Punishment Martinez in Ring of Honor. And I was happy to see he cashed in and he's now world champion in WWE. But mine is still AEW. I'm a big AEW nut.
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge AEW fan, and I pretty much stopped watching WWE like a few years ago, and then I tried to watch WrestleMania, and I watched the first night, and it's just not for me anymore, man. It's like there's so many commercials and ads, and the ads are everywhere on it, and the time between the matches, you watch both shows, so I'm sure you see this.
I did not watch any of Mania.
Oh, okay. I meant you watch. Well, you watch Raw, I guess. But
yeah,
the time. So you're more committed than I am. I watched the Ring of Honor show on Friday night, though, before WrestleMania. Yeah. That was a good show.
Eddie lost another title. I'm so upset.
I'm a huge Eddie Kingston fan.
I am an Eddie Kingston nut. I do. I love Eddie.
Yeah. He's one guy, like, you talk about guys you want to meet someday. Like, that would be, if he ever was, like, came around New England area and it was, like, a small show, I would go to see him and just to shake his hand because he is for real. He is awesome. And that was a war those two guys had that night. And frankly, I thought it was better than anything I saw of the WrestleMania. But since you didn't see it, it's ads. They have an ad in the middle of the ring now on the ring apron. They have ads on the turnbuckles. All the barrier around the ring is ads that rotate. And then matches are sponsored by things. And there's a little bug up in the corner for the sponsor. And it's like, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. And then I sound like an old man now or I don't know what, but then the time between the matches, like 20 minutes, like a match will end and it'll be 20 minutes until they get to the next match. And it's
that's crazy.
Yeah. And then you watch AEW and it's like, while one guy's leaving the ring, they're getting ready for the next guy to come to the ring. It's like they almost don't give you any time to breathe between the matches. It's crazy.
Yeah, what I get upset with is I watched the Raw after because I wanted to see – because I was told Damian won. I didn't see it. And I wanted to see what they did for him. And it ended up being Cody Rhodes talking for almost an hour with The Rock. No commercial, okay? But no wrestling. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? I want wrestling. I don't want to listen to this crap. And that kind of ticked me off. And then because I watched 2 hours of it and there was two matches in that 2 hours and one of them was 5 minutes long and the other one might have been 15.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the heck? So I went home and I put it on Hulu and I fast forward through all the talk. But I realized when I did that they actually cut out that 10-minute match after Cody got done talking and went straight on to Judgment Day talking before they showed the first match. I was like, so you're actually cutting stuff out of the program for people to actually watch and still it's all talk.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And it's really confounding to me because as a longtime fan, it's like they're so hot right now. This is like the hottest they've been in 20 years. And it's like, I don't get it. I feel like I'm completely out of the loop. I'm like, you know, this thing set all kinds of records. People are saying it was like the best WrestleMania ever. And I'm like, I watched one day of it and the main event the next day. The main event was good. Don't get me wrong. Rock, it was Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and the way it ended. I'm sure you heard about how it ended. It was like,
oh yeah, with Cena and Taker and
it was tit for tat and each guy came out and they kind of offset each other. And if you were invested in this years long storyline, I bet it was awesome. Right. I bet it was like, oh, this guy came out and then he set off that guy and all those chain of events happened. But to me, it was just like, oh, Christ, this is so cheesy. And then they celebrated. I don't know if you heard about it. They celebrated at the end for like 10 minutes, and they brought Triple H out and he hugged Cody. And it was like, oh, we get it. Vince McMahon's gone. You're hitting us over like that's the whole point of this weekend was to assure everybody that Vince McMahon is gone and it's the Triple H era. And it was like, I'm good.
Yeah. No, I like my AEW. I mean, I don't think that there's too many people on the card that I don't like to watch. Even if you love to hate them, you know, it's like there's not too many people that I do not want to, you know, when they come out, I'm like, oh, God, I got to watch them wrestle. You know what I mean?
Right. No, it's a fantastic roster. It's like.
Yeah, it is. I don't think a lot of there's some that I don't think get utilized as much. But with the timelines that they've got and stuff, you know, the constrictions, it's hard, but they still make sure everybody is, you know, seen and stuff. Yeah. I'm a major House of Black fan. freaking love the House of Black. You know, Eddie Kingston's my favorite. And Darby Allin, my daughter will tell you straight up that that is my honorary child. I go into mom mode with Darby Allin. Darby, don't do Darby. Darby, no, no, Darby, don't.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. He's like the breakout guy of AEW. Yeah, they're going through a little bit of a rough patch, AEW, but I'm still on board with what they're doing. I just wish I have a lot of complaints, don't get me wrong, like all wrestling fans. Too many titles, way too many titles. And I don't like necessarily all the ROH stuff. I'd like them to keep it kind of separate a little more.
I think they should, because ROH was separate. I agree with that wholeheartedly. The other night they had a Battle of the Belts, and it was
the ROH women's title, and it was like,
wait. Yeah. And yeah. For somebody who doesn't recognize the FTW championship, that shouldn't have been on there either.
That whole Battle of the Belts was ridiculous. And the third match was a match to get a title shot, and the guy didn't even win. So it was like, why not make it a title shot? Why don't you just make it – if you're going to lose anyway, why don't you just make it a title shot? So
yes.
There's a lot of confusing things. But that's – you know, that's what I like about AEW is it's so rough around the edges. And it's so – no pun intended – so raw. And they make mistakes and they do dumb shit. With WWE, I watch it. It was like I'm watching a Marvel movie. Like everything is perfectly timed and da-da-da. And it's like, look, if you want your shit that way – cool, but I like a good indie film. I like the rawness of AEW and what they're doing. So even if it's even if I'm like, just when are you gonna split Mariah May from Toni Storm already?
This is oh my god, thank you.
November.
Yes. Yeah, no, there's stuff like that too. I love it, and I'm sorry, I do not like Mariah May.
I love Mariah May. Oh, I'm a huge Mariah May fan.
No, I don't like Mariah May. I don't like the whole storyline with her and Tony and stuff. It's getting too weird and out there. But you know, it's she's still entertaining to watch. You know, yeah. I'll give her that. But no, I'm not a big Mariah May fan at all.
All right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but we'll talk more wrestling in Portland when I see you, so it'll be fun. And I'll let you get going because the wrestling's going to start. We're already past the beginning of it.
I'm not watching Raw tonight. I just want to see Damian that time.
Oh, there you go.
I follow him on social media, so I don't have to deal with all the bullshit.
They give all of it away anyway. If you follow either of these leagues on Twitter, it's like, why do I even bother? Why bother to watch the show? You're just going to show me all the clips that I need to see anyway. So if you can follow WWE and only just through their Twitter channels and their YouTube channels, it's kind of like, well, that's good. Because who has time to invest in all that?
Yep.
But did you go to the big business show?
No, we wanted to because I was actually – my daughter was like, you're going to contact him? And I said – but they gave us 5 weeks. And then when they sold the tickets, this is what does piss me off about them is they sold the tickets, but they would sell them only in blocks. Like all the seating wasn't up for sale at the same time.
Right.
And it was like, oh, my God. So when they finally did open up to all of it, it was like down on the floor in the back. And I'm like, no, I want where we were for Blood and Guts. I want off to the side. I don't need to be on the camera side, you know, and stuff. And everything, but no, then we do plan. My daughter literally said, if we get tickets, we're letting Tim know, right? And I said, yes, we will let Tim know.
Yes, let me know if you guys go next time, and I'll jump in on the tickets for sure.
Well, I would have, my son usually orders them and stuff, so I was going to have him order four, but like I said, when we tried to do it, it was like, what the heck, you know, where's the seat? Why is there only like three little blocks in this big TD Bank Arena thing? I was like, they really need to just, when tickets go on sale, sell the tickets. Don't, you know, put them off in little blocks at a time.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping we'd get a pay-per-view in Boston, but they kind of give us the quasi, the Blood and Guts, the big business. They kind of do like the big TV shows there, but I was still hoping we'd get a pay-per-view this year, but I guess not. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Great market for AEW. Boston's like a super market for them. So.
Oh, I'm just happy that they moved it to TD Bank because that Argos Arena that it was at before or whatever it was called was so rinky dink and it was awful. So when they went to TD Bank, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, they sold out the seating for Blood and Guts and stuff. And it's like, I don't mind those ones as long as it's a TV taping and it's one of the ones that's almost like a TV. It's kind of like a TV pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that because they do put on one hell of a show. I've been to two of the shows for AEW, and I love both of them. They did a great job. So
yeah, you're almost always guaranteed to have at least one excellent match on this. Like, and that's what I like about them. Like, you're almost guaranteed to have a very, very good, at least one very good match. More than likely, you're going to see two or three, like, you know, some of the best matches you've ever seen in your life. Like, the quality of the wrestlers on in that league is just unbelievable. Anyway, all right. Well, we could talk about – we could do, like, another hour on wrestling, but then people will be like, what the hell am I so as I said, International Cryptozoology Conference, April 26th, 27th, Portland, Maine, cryptozoologymuseum.simpletix.com, and then 40 Infest 2024, June 8th in Sanford, Maine. Gene, this has been awesome. It's been great to get the chance to talk to you and get you on Banal of America, and hopefully, you know, keep pushing the buzz here on the big event at the end of April. If this is news to people listening, get your tickets. They're not expensive. They're very affordable, and you can go and check it out. Like I said, Friday night VIP dinner thing and a keynote there, and then Saturday a whole bunch of presentations. And if you're going, you may see me roaming around the event. If not sneaking down to Bissell Brothers, though, I may have to sneak down at least once while I'm there. But yeah, and you can check out the museum too. So it's a really great weekend. Like I said, this is the first time they've been doing it in 5 years, and I've been at a few of them actually. I think I've been to three of them, and the last one was 2019. So, and I had a lot of fun. So is there anywhere we should direct people? Do you have a website or anything you want to send people to?
No, not yet. I'm working on that. So
I guess this is almost the standard question I ask everybody who now this is, I don't have a book either. So, but that, are you under pressure? If you like to write a book, are you going to put a book out anytime soon?
Actually, that was a discussion that I had last year with Lauren and stuff. Cause he was like, you need to write a book. He's like,
everybody said, yeah.
I'm a sponge when it comes to stuff, when it comes to this topic, and people literally look at me like, I had one woman who was a school teacher, and she was like, how do you know all this stuff? You know, cause she had a sighting and she was reporting it to me. And I'm like, no, it's something that I am completely interested in, and I'm putting all of my, you know, a focus on, and I am bound and determined. If I'm saying something, I'm not screwing something up.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, I think you're doing awesome work, and I look forward to seeing your presentation at the end of the month and catching up with you at the big event. And I can't thank you enough. This was a lot of fun, Gene, and you know, best of luck with the presentation, and I'll see you on the Saturday in Portland.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Can't wait to see you on the 27th. And thanks for having me on.